for our main speaker tonight, coming to us from the firing line in Roseville, please help me welcome Mike L.
Hello. Hi. My name is Mike Lemon. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks to the program, My Action, and the Big Book, I have been sober since January 6th of 2017. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, and I have a home group. I'm grateful to be here. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and everything I have in my life today is because of this program, and I'm honored to be here. My story is, I didn't have a horrible childhood. I grew up on the east side of St. Paul in a middle-class family. I was loved. I was cared for. There was nothing there too abnormal. I can tell you from an early age, I had that feeling that we hear about over and over in this, right? That something in me wasn't right, and everybody knew it. And from an early age, in the Big Book, it talks about, like, the alcoholic's like the actor to the outside world. He wants them to play this character, right? And as a kid, everywhere I would go, I would show up differently. Because I knew that you knew, right? And I wasn't okay. And then I went through life feeling like a fraud. Well, I know now it's because I was a fraud, but I didn't know that then, right? And I just felt like everybody would find out, because everywhere I went, I was being something different, right? And, I had some tendencies. Like, as a kid, I was a decent athlete, and I played basketball. I was an okay basketball player. But I would play to the point where, like, I would get up at 4:30 a.m., shovel the snow off the court, and be out there playing basketball at 4:30 in the morning, because I can see now, like, anything in my life that's ever made me feel good or that ever made me feel like I was okay, I've done to an extreme, long before drugs and alcohol, right? And, at about 13 years old, I found drugs and alcohol, and that happened to work better than sports, right? I knew when I found that was it. Like, I was okay. This was it, right? And at that point, pretty much everything went out the window. By the time I was 18 years old, I was in and out of juvenile places. I was in, like, 6 or 7 treatment centers. I was sent all over the state, down to South Dakota. I was in criminal trouble. I was, I was using alcohol. I was a human garbage can. Anything I could get my hands on, I would use. All those, I know today, like, all that external stuff isn't what makes me an alcoholic, but I could sit here and tell you stories, but to make a long story short, until I was 28 years old, that was the story of my life, right? I should say at 19 and 20, I had 2 daughters. So I'm a full-blown addict and alcoholic, and I brought 2 little kids in this world. I went to prison at 21. When I got out of prison at 22, their mom had some troubles, and these girls came to live with me. And I wasn't capable of taking care of them. So what I would do is I would find a woman, and I would bring these women and these little girls' lives and these little girls and these women's life, so I could do what I needed to do, right? And I basically, the women took care of them for me. And that's the only reason I held on to them for as long as I did. At 28 years old, things were kind of caving in on me. I'd been in some more legal trouble. Bunch of crap was going on. As a result of the way I was living, some people came in my house with pistols, and my daughters were in the other room, like 30 feet away from me, and that shook me up enough to make me start thinking, like, I need to start living differently. I had been a meth user. All these years I tried to manage my addiction, right? Like, because I had these little girls, I would just drink, or I would just, I would try to stay away from the hard drugs because I was convinced I wasn't an alcoholic. But these, it was the hard drugs that were really a problem. And then I would go have one drink on a Friday night, and I would come home 4 days later, And that was kind of my story for a lot of years. And I hadn't done meth in about a year because of what had happened, I had hid some money for myself in my house, and I was searching all over for the house for this money. I couldn't find it, and I found some meth in like a little pocket right here on one shirt that I didn't know was there. And I did it, and I took off for 2 days, and I came back at like 4 a.m. I left him with my girlfriend, ex-girlfriend, who had moved out into the apartment next door for me, to me, which we could, that's a whole nother story, but just left my kids with her, took off for 2 days. I came back 2 days later, my daughters were in their room sleeping, and it was like 4 a.m. And I broke down, and I was hyperventilating, and I was crying, and I remember just looking at them, and like, just tired of hurting people. And I remember, and I didn't necessarily believe in God. I didn't pray. I didn't anything. And I just remember saying, God, please help me. God, please help me. God, please help me. And at this point, I was laying in my bed, and I had this sense of peace and this, I don't know, if you would have told me this, I would have told you you were full of shit. But I had this sense of peace come over me. I heard a voice say, everything's going to be okay. And then the next thought in my head was a year before I'd been in an outpatient treatment center, and some guy said, I know most of you guys are going to go back out there and use, but when you do and you want to get sober, I'm at this Alano Club every day at this time. And out of nowhere, that was a thought in my head, like, be at this Alano Club at 10 o'clock the next day. And I showed up there, and I share that story because, you know, I had this crazy experience, like, and I knew there was something, whatever that is, right? Like, I still don't know this day, but I knew there was something. But that experience wasn't enough to keep me sober. And I showed up at this Alano Club, and I'm not here to knock what anybody does, you know, but this, it was kind of just a place where people showed up, went to meetings, hung out. It was kind of a social hour, right? And there wasn't like, there wasn't a lot of programs going on there. There wasn't a lot of people working the steps out of the big book. And you know, if you're an alcoholic of the type that I am, I'm suffering from an illness only a spiritual experience can fix, right? Like, don't drink and go to meetings. Doesn't work for me. I wish it did. No, I don't wish it did because I wouldn't have the life I had. Sorry. But I do like an easier, softer way. So, anyways, I went through, I said I was sober for 5 years. The truth of that is I have no clue how long I was sober, and it was nowhere near 5 years. But I told that lie for so long. I don't know if anybody's ever done this, but I told that lie for so long that I started to believe it. You know, somewhere in there I started smoking pot. Somewhere in there I got escorted off an airplane in Atlanta, passed out off Xanax because I was up for too many days. But in this period of 5 years sobriety, you know, I didn't pick up a drink, and I went through life selling, saying that I was sober for 5 years. You know, 5 years later I sat down with this girl. I was on a date, and I sat down and she ordered a 2-for-1, and out of nowhere, I was like, give me one of them. And for somebody that would tell you they weren't an alcoholic, like, my life spiraled like that. You know, I had managed to do a little bit of maintaining, but my life spiraled. 2.5 years later, I'm in a treatment center, and I went from having this experience where I knew there was something that existed to I don't believe in God, right? Like, from that to that. Then I end up at a Christian treatment center of all places. It was a Christian treatment center that also uses the 12 steps. So I'm in there arguing with them, and, you know, you're not going to tell me about God and this and that. And thankfully they just let me, they believed in AA, so they let me come to my own stuff. But, so before I ended up there, after I started drinking, about 3 weeks after I started drinking, we had got a call. And the mother of my kids had passed away drinking and driving. She hit an 81-year-old man head-on. She killed him. She died, and the person in her car was in critical condition. And I tell that story because I remember sitting there. after my kids buried their mom, and I they were from Mankato. I took them down to Mankato, and we're sitting around a bonfire, and my kids buried their mom, and I got a drink hit on my side and a pocket full of pain pills because my kids don't know I'm drinking. And I remember thinking to myself, I just can't stand to see my kids this way. And to me, that like speaks to the selfishness of this disease, right? Because to me, it presents itself like the most important thing in my life is my kids. But to me, the most important thing in my life is how I feel, right? And it doesn't make me a bad person, because the reality of it is I just didn't know. I didn't know no different, right? I was doing the best I could, and I believe that. But selfish, and so, like, I can't see past myself. As much as I love these kids, as much as I want to do whatever for them, all I can see is how I feel, right? That I see the world from a selfish, self-centered viewpoint. So anyways, I end up in treatment. Kind of the same story. I came in there, I will tell you, I've never come in Alcoholics Anonymous not wanting to be sober. Like, I'm not one of them people that just wander in here, right? I come in here because I'm beaten down, because I've had enough, because I'm desperate. But I believe, like, there's a small window there. And if I don't take action, if I don't make the changes, like, quick, my ego returns and I'm back out there. So I went through this program, spent 2.5 years sober. I had been with a girl she had 3 kids, I had 2 kids, and we were living together. Well, I would go on these benders I talked about, and I would disappear for days, and that's how I ended up in treatment, because she had enough. I was tired of hurting people. And I went into treatment, and I was willing, and then she came back. And then I'm good. I got my stuff back, right? And then she became my God, right? I remember the treatment center director saying to me, anything you put before this, you're going to lose. I said, well, what? It's my family. Like, what do you mean? And I couldn't get the concept, right? Like, this, if I center my life around this, everything else will fall in place. So 2.5 years go by, we break up. And then there I am, an addict and alcoholic with no solution, and I'm in turmoil. So what do? I did what we do. I drank. Thankfully, it didn't last long. It wasn't fun. There was nothing. It was nothing there for me anymore. But it was just painful the whole time. It only lasted like a month. And I found my way back into AA. And I remember what happened. I was going to these rush hour meetings over at the Sahara Club. And I'm an alcoholic, so I like to sound good. I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about, but I want to sound like I'm the smartest person in the room. And most of the time I think I am, but anyway, so I'm going to this meeting. I'm a week sober, and I want to sound like I got it all figured out. So I Google. I knew the meeting was like, it was a step meeting, and I knew it was on step 6 and 7. So I Google speakers on step 6 and 7, and I listen to this guy from Florida. And he was actually, if any of you guys went to Gopher State this year, he was the main speaker at Gopher State this year on Saturday night. But for whatever reason, that was the first time I had heard the message of AA, right? And he was talking about, on page 52 of the big book, it talks about, they call them the bedevilments, and it talks about basically our real problem is we're selfish and self-centered. That's not how it says it, but it says, you know, because we're full of fear, because we can't seem to be a real help to other people, because we can't seem to make a living. And I'm a couple weeks sober, and I'm feeling all this stuff, right? The drugs and alcohol are gone, and I'm still uncomfortable. I'm still full of me, right? And that was the first time, like, I heard that, and I realized, like, this isn't the drugs and alcohol. Like, this is something else. It's me. My friend Matt Stone will tell you it's selfish and self-centeredness, right? And that's the root of my trouble. So for whatever reason that day, I heard that, and it kind of I was at a place where I was willing to do whatever, right? And it was the first time in my life, like, I was actually willing to do this stuff. I was in enough pain and I was in enough turmoil that I could get rid of some of the shit I think I know, right? Like, one of the truest things I've ever heard somebody say is it's the things you think you know that are killing you, right? Like, and I talked about having that experience years earlier. And I had that experience and I knew there was something and that changed me, but it never changed the way I think, right? I just went from an alcoholic that didn't believe in God to an alcoholic that did believe in God, right? There was no internal change. There was nothing, like, I still thought the same. I still looked at the world the same. I was still selfish and self-centered to the core. And, you know, that's what I believe this big book is. It's designed to make that change so we see the world. When they talk about a spiritual experience in the big book, they talk about seeing the world differently. They talk about experiencing the world differently, right? And that's what needed to happen to me. So I came in, I got on fire for this program, and I started doing this stuff, and my life started changing. You know, we read those three pertinent ideas, and it's, you know, we read them, and it's that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that no human power could relieve our alcoholism, and that God could and would if he were sought. And then there's that line after, and it says, being convinced. And I look back at my life, and up until that point, I was never convinced, right? I came in here, and I still always thought I could do this, right? I always thought, this time it'll be different. I'll learn a little bit about myself. You know, I never understood, like, what it meant to be alcoholic, that once I start, I can't stop. And, you know, the allergy, and in and of my own power, I can't stay stopped. And I never thought that was, I didn't realize till later how important that is to understand that, right? Because as long as I think I can do it, I'm not going to seek another power. As long as I think I can manage this, why would I seek something else, right? If I can do this, why would I look outside myself? And until I was convinced of that, and until I sat down with somebody who explained to me what I was suffering from, like, I don't think I stood a chance. And then, like I said, sitting down and learning that, you know, this isn't the rest of the world, this is me. I remember when I sat down and I did an inventory for my first time. You know, and I looked for my mistakes and I went through a lot of this stuff and I could see my mistakes in most of this stuff. Some of it's pretty glaring, some of it's pretty obvious, right? And I had this one. And I had sold a friend a piece of crap Chevy Cavalier for like $1,000 and I let him make payments to me. And he made all the payments, but he never transferred the title. And I'm getting tickets and I'm getting tickets and I'm sitting down and I'm writing inventory on this and I'm like, yeah, there's no way in hell this guy's gonna tell me. I mean, thinking about my sponsor, like, there's no way this guy's gonna tell me I made a mistake here. Like, I tried to help this guy out. I'm a good guy, man. He was my friend. He had kids. I tried to help him out. And I'm, like, getting self-righteous, like, thinking, hey, I got one over on him. And I sat down with him, and in 1 second, he looked at me and said, couldn't you have flipped the title over and mailed that thing in on the back that says you sold the car? And it seemed stupid. But at that point, like, it hit me, like, this is all me, right? I've been spending my whole life blaming everybody for everything that happened. And I'm responsible for this in one way or the other, right? Even if something happened to me, maybe that I didn't deserve, I'm responsible for holding on to it, or I'm responsible for continuing to letting it kill me, right? There's a lot of people in this room that had a lot of stuff happen to them that I'm sure they didn't deserve. But that doesn't mean, like, we're still not responsible for continuing to let it kill us, right? And I'll tell you, at that moment, like, that was freedom. Because to me, that's counterintuitive, right? Like, I've spent my whole life blaming the whole world, thinking the way out of this is to convince you that this is your fault or that it's not my fault. They did this, I did that, they did this, I did that, right? And the way out of it is to admit it's my fault. Because then I actually have some, then I have some control. I'm not powerless. As long as I'm at the mercy of the world and everything that goes on in it, I'm in trouble. And when I start to be responsible for the way I show up and the way I react, then I have some power, right? I remember my first sponsor I got. He probably isn't the guy I would pick now. But I'll tell you what he was a service guy. And he hammered in my head right away that my life depended on me being helpful. That I didn't need to sit around and wait till I worked the steps, till I could sponsor somebody. That I needed to get busy trying to start to get outside of myself, right? Because I don't know how long I had till I drank again. And my main problem today is still that I think about me too much, right? When I'm having a bad day, it ain't because I'm thinking about what I can do for my wife or my kid or how I can be of service at work. You know, it's what can I get? What can I take? Why is this guy such an idiot, right? Like, they're obviously not as smart as me. And it's still the same problem I had when I got here, right? That I need to start getting out of myself immediately. And if I don't, I might not make it. And I'm thankful for that he taught me that, right? Because it would serve me better later in life when things came up. And it's still what I do today. You know, so not too long after I was sober, I met my wife. I was about 6 months sober, so she was a couple years sober, so I don't know what she was doing, but fishing in the sick pond. but we got married. And man, I don't know. This program changed my life, and my life was great, and things were happening. And COVID happened. She got pregnant. We had a son. And we both got complacent, right? And I'll tell you that things weren't pretty in our house, right? It was not a pretty sight. If things would have went on the way they were going, I'm sure we probably would be divorced and we'd probably both be drunk today, to be honest with you. And you know, it's ironic that I had a daughter at the time was 22 now, one of those little girls I told you about. And she started going through her own struggles and her own issues. And I would still pray at night for some reason. And I remember sitting there praying, and I would say, God, please help my daughter to get here, because I know something has to happen for her to get here, right? Where she's not just going to wake up one day and think, gosh, I got to get sober. But, you know, please don't let it be too bad, just enough for her to get here. I don't know. And clear as day, the next thought in my head was, how selfish of you is that? You don't want to do your part, but you want AA to be here to help her. And I remember, like, that was enough to get me off my ass. You know, I'm sitting around hoping somebody saves my daughter's life, but I'm sitting around doing nothing. Doing nothing. So a couple months after that, my daughter ends up in the hospital. She started using opiates, IV. She got something called endocarditis, which is a staph infection in her blood. And I remember she's sitting in the hospital, and I'm trying to... She was sober for like 6 days, and they decided to put her on methadone, and I didn't like it. And I'm not judging what anybody does. I just wasn't a fan of it at the time. I thought she was sober for 6 days, and I was pissed off. And I was cussing the doctors out, and I was trying to control the whole situation, and I knew it. And I remember sitting in a meeting at the Christ Recovery Center is where I went to treatment. And I remember sitting in a meeting right after I got sober. I started taking a meeting down there. And I remember sitting in a meeting 5 years earlier and this guy talking about, I couldn't tell you one thing he said, but I remember him talking about his kid that just passed away from a heroin overdose. And that stuck with me. And I started trying to reach out to this guy, and I had his name wrong, and I couldn't get a hold of him. My daughter ended up getting out of the hospital. Because of her condition, we couldn't get her in treatment right away. She had to have some, we had to give her some medication IV at home. So she came home and lived with me and my wife, and you know, she seemed to be doing good for like 4 months. And, you know, thanks to this program, and I got to spend 4 months with my daughter. And right around Christmas time of 2019, I remember her sitting saying, I know this is the most selfish thing I can think of, but I just want to get high. And she ended up going back out, and a month later she was dead. And you know, I don't know if anybody's got these ideas in their head, but I'm going to stay sober unless this happens, right? And I always have those little things in my head. Yeah, I'm going to stay sober, but if something happens to my kids, no, I'm not going to, there's no, you know, I'm not going to stay sober. And the weird thing is, except for a brief moment when I left the hospital, I never thought about drinking or using. I remember being with my daughter. I picked my other daughter up and brought her down there, and I remember leaving. I remember leaving the hospital, and I like 6 in the morning, I'm like, oh, a drink would sound good right now. And like that, I was gone. Right? And that's because of this program, because that's not the way I operate. You know, that guy I told you about, it's funny, the day my daughter passed away, his name came to me, you know. I thought his name was Mike the whole time out, and my daughter passed away, and they're like, oh, no, his name's Jeremy. So I end up reaching out to this guy that I don't know, that I just heard say this, right? Another AA member. He's my sponsor now. He's became my sponsor, you know, but he kind of walks through this thing with me. Because one thing I was always taught is to, like, seek people's experiences, right? If somebody doesn't have that experience in here, somebody else does, right? And find somebody that has that experience and that has been through that sober. So I remember he said to me the first time I called him, he said, I can tell you what's going to get you through this. He said, it's either going to take you towards God or it's going to take you away from God. And that changed my life, right? Because I knew if I let it take me away, it was gonna, right? It was gonna kill me. And you know, I don't know how this stuff works, and I don't know why. And it doesn't really matter. I know there's a lot of other people that have been through this, right? I'm not unique. I'm not alone. And this might sound weird to somebody who hasn't been through something like this, but by him telling me that and me listening to that, I grew more from that situation than I've grown in my life, right? And it doesn't mean I would trade my daughter back for any growth I've had in a heartbeat. But because somebody pointed me towards God, right? I don't know what, you know, Bill, when they talk about pain is all touchstone for all spiritual growth, right? And I believe that. And I believe that's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? My whole life I've been trying to avoid pain. I've been letting it kill me. I've been doing anything to feel it, right? When the whole thing it's supposed to have been doing is pointing me towards something else, right? In step 6 and 7, that's all we do, right? We let this stuff start taking us towards God instead of away from God, our defects, our shortcomings, right? And try to become more reliant on this power. So, I mean, the only thing I knew how to do to get through this was AA. Like, I learned to be of service. Like, that's what I learned. That's what AA taught me. That's what I know. I know the day we buried her, I went and played pickup basketball at like 6 at night because I wanted to do something after the funeral. I didn't want to go sit at home. And I'm walking in the door at like 10 at night, and I'm in bed by 8:30 because I'm lame. And I like it that way. And my phone rings at 10 o'clock at night, right? And it's like, my wife's like, who the hell is that? And I pick it up, and it's a drunk guy. And I didn't know who it was. I didn't remember him. I hadn't seen him in like 3.5 years. And he tells me, yeah, I erased everybody's number in my phone but yours. And this is what happens the day I bury my daughter, right? Like, I don't believe her. I know for a without a doubt that she put me back in the middle of this program for a reason, right? Because I ask God for help, and this is what he gives me. Right? When I need God help, he gives me another alcoholic, right? He gives me you guys. And I believe that. And I remember my wife looked at me, and she said, "Who was that?" I said, "I'm pretty sure it was God." Yeah. I don't know. I could sit up here and talk about stuff that's happened all for hours and hours about that after that, after her death, you know. I'll share one more story with you guys, and I'll cut it short. But, you know, I had another guy I'd been trying to help, and he was in a mess psychosis, and I off and on had been trying to help him, and he was in psychosis bad. There was really no helping him, but he was also a friend of mine, so I'd pick him up. We'd go have pizza. We'd hang out. We'd do stuff. And this guy is out there. And he messages me on Messenger, and he says, I'm sorry to hear about your daughter. And this is what he sends me. The painful past, page 124 of the big book, if anybody wants to know. The painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family who has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of us should be too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how they were given help is the very thought which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the fact that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And I'll tell you, that's the only way I could make any sense of that, right? That's the only way I can make any sense of my alcoholism and the pain I've caused people, if it can be used to help somebody else. You know? And I clung to that fact, like, and I've, you know, another guy sat down with me who had been through the same experience, and he used his experience to help me get through that. The same thing we do here, right? And I don't know why this stuff happens in life. I don't, like I said, I'm not unique. I'm not the only person that's lost a kid. If you lose a kid, you know a lot of people lost kids. You know, and shit happens, man. Sometimes life sucks. But maybe our experience can benefit others, right? And that's changed my life. It's not all about me. Although the time, my wife will tell you, this is why I like to speak after my wife, because I can stand up here and say whatever I want. No fact checking tonight, but you know, I've been given a gift. I have. And in spite of everything that's happened and the sad stuff, I wouldn't trade my life for anything. And I'll tell you, when I showed up here, like, I wasn't interested in what's in this book. Right. I would have settled for don't drink and go to meetings. And I told you, thank God that didn't work, right? Because I would have sold myself so short. I've been given a life I don't deserve. And I made it when I say I owe everything to this program. And that's all I got. I'll pass.